Title, Don't Fool Yourself. We have a tendency to fool ourselves or to be fooled or allow ourselves to be fooled. I've seen the drawings, the paintings, the photographs that look like one thing, but when you shift your focus, you see something different, the optical illusions, etc. Like, for example, this one, that when you turn it over is this one. Or this one. You don't see that one? Some do, some don't. Okay, now that's part of the fun of it and part of the illusion of it. Or this one. Interestingly enough, some biblical concepts present a similar phenomenon. Not because there's a hidden message, like there was in at least one of those pictures. Not because God's trying to trick us, but because of our perspective. Because of the way we approach the text, the way it has been taught to us in the past, the first time we heard it. I shared one of those with you last year, and that's the cross. You know, we see gold crosses and we see silver crosses and we see statues and paintings and stuff. The beauty is not in the cross itself. It's not in the gold and silver, the representation of that image. The cross itself, what we see is hideous. The cross is heart-wrenching. The cross is gross when you look at what happened there. The beauty of the cross is in the act. And so you have to shift the perspective a little bit to see the actual value there. I'm going to share another one with you today. It's an optical illusion, for lack of a better term, in several ways. It's beautiful and hideous at the exact same time. It's heartwarming and heart-wrenching. It's a kid's story, at least we tell it that way, and yet it's hardly a kid's story. So we're going to look at it in both perspectives, realize that all those things are taking place at the exact same time. And what we want to emphasize is kind of like what we emphasize with the cross, is that we don't get hung up on just one side of the story. That we realize that there is another side, that there is a lesson that God is trying to teach us. So question, what is the first thing that comes to your mind when I mention the flood? Bible classes, a child this tall. Images like, oh, by the way, the background images from now on, at least until nearly the end, will be of the Ark in Kentucky that some of you have already visited. And so kind of give you an insight into it. But when you think of the ark, do you get the kiddie version? The cute little animals, the ark that looks nothing like the ark, the extra windows. Do you get the cartoony one? Do you get the image of the little toys that we have sometime in the nursery with the plastic animals? Or even a chocolate version of it. I think Megan just ate my ark. She went. Do you see the beauty in the ark? Is it there? Absolutely. Genesis 6 and verse 8. As the story gets started, it says, "But Noah pleased the Lord." That's beautiful. When you look at a world that it says that God understands now that every intent of the thought of man's heart is evil continually. And there's the one. There's some beauty there. It's not kitty, but it's beauty. Genesis 6 verses 18 through 22. There's beauty there. "I will make an agreement with you. Your sons, your wife, your sons' wives will all go into the ark. Also, you must bring into the boat two of every living thing, male and female. Keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, animal, crawling thing will come to you to be kept alive. Gather some of every kind of food. Store it on the boat as food for you and the animals. Noah did everything that God commanded him. And so again, beauty, the idea of a covenant, the idea of Noah pleasing God and through him, the rest of his family being blessed. The fact that Noah did everything God commanded him. Chapter 7, verse 1, then the Lord said to Noah, enter the ark, you and all your household, for you alone have I seen to be righteous before me in this time. Again, beauty. The ark's finished, and so God says, you can go in. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to seal the door. I'm going to keep you on the inside. I'm going to keep the water on the outside. The beauty of the fact that Noah is righteous. Chapter 8, verses 1 through 3. My favorite phrase in the entire story of the flood. But God remembered Noah. God had kept his hand on him. God had protected him, and it was time to go back and get him. So God remembered Noah and all the wild and tame animals with him in the boat. The wind began to blow over the earth and the water went down. The underground spring stopped flowing. The clouds stopped pouring rain. The water that covered the earth began to go down. 150 days it had gone down so much that the boat touched land again. Came to rest on the mountains of Ararat on the 17th day of the 7th month. A year plus from day one. 120 years plus since the day God gave the command. And yet God remembers Noah and he dries it up and he brings him out. So there's some beauty there. Genesis chapter 8, starting at verse 13 and reading down through the end of the chapter. It came about in the 601st year, the first month, the first of the month, the water was dried up from the earth. Noah removed the covering of the ark, and look, behold, the surface of the ground was dried up. So on the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dry. God spoke to Noah, saying, go out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Bring out with you every living thing of all the flesh that is with you, birds and animals and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, that they may breed abundantly on the earth, be fruitful. Multiply. Noah went out, his sons, his wives, and his sons' wives with him. Every beast, creeping thing, every bird, everything that moves on the earth went out by their families from the ark. Noah built an altar to the Lord. And he took of every clean animal and every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. The Lord smelled the soothing aroma. The Lord said to himself, I will never again curse the ground on account of man. For the intent of man's heart is evil from his youth. I will never again destroy every living thing as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, all day and night shall not cease. And so there's some beauty. Noah and his family survive. The animals survive. The gratitude that is shown to God by Noah and the offering, and the promise that God says, I'll never do it again like this. This world's going to continue until the end of time. Chapter 9, verse 11 through 16. Story of the rainbow. I'll never again destroy the earth by a flood. And as a sign, I'm going to put my rainbow in the sky. And you'll be able to see it every time it rains and the clouds. And it forms just right. I'll be reminded that this isn't going to happen again. You're going to continue before me until the end of time. So there's some beauty there. There's some kiddie story there. There's some heartwarming story there. But have you ever noticed that there is another side to it? Have you ever noticed that there is some horror in the story of the flood? That just as it is heartwarming, it is heart-wrenching. That it is ugly. It's even gross. Genesis chapter 6, starting with verse 5. Remember those who are in my Wednesday night Bible class, we read for detail. We read it as if we've never seen it before. We've just looked at parts of it that have some beauty. Now watch this. The Lord saw that the human beings on the earth were very wicked. and that everything they thought about was evil. That's horror. He was sorry that he made human beings on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. That's heartbreaking. That's heart-wrenching. God looks down at the ones made in his image, and he said, man, sorry I made you. The Lord said, I'll destroy all human beings that I made on the earth. I'll also destroy every animal and everything that crawls on the earth and the birds of the air, because I'm sorry that I've made them. There's nothing pretty there. There's nothing kiddie there. There's nothing cartoonish. It's heart-wrenching. It's sorrowing. Chapter 6, verses 11 through 13. People on earth did what God said was evil. There was violence everywhere. When God saw that everyone on the earth did only evil, he said to Noah, because the people have made the earth full of violence, I'll destroy them. Heart-wrenching. Terrifying. I'll bring a flood of water on the earth to destroy all living things that are under the sky, including everything that has the breath of life. Everything on the earth will die. There's no beauty there. That's the second side of the same story. A universal global flood that wipes out every living thing outside of the ark that's been walking on dry land. Chapter 7, verses 11 and 12. When Noah was 600 years old, the flood started. The 17th day of the second month of the year, the underground spring split open and the clouds in the sky poured out the rain. The rain fell on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. God's earth is literally torn apart. And the underground reservoirs begin to rush out. And the sky is split open. The canopy tears. And the water begins to dump out of the clouds. Starting in verse 17, water flooded the earth for 40 days. It rose. It lifted the boat off the ground. Continued to rise. The boat floated on it above the earth. The water rose so much that even the highest mountains under the sky were covered by it. Continued to rise until it was more than 20 feet above the mountains. All living things that moved on the earth died. It's a big funeral. It's a lot of burials. All the birds, tame animals, wild animals, creatures that swarm on the earth, as well as all the human beings. Everything on dry land that had the breath of life in it died. God destroyed from the earth every living thing that was on the land. Every man, animal, crawling thing, bird of the sky. All that was left was Noah and what was with him in the boat. Listen very carefully. No matter how many coloring pages we print out for our kids to color in Bible classes with the giraffes and the zebras and the monkeys and the bright colors and the rainbow, no matter how kiddy we make it, no matter how heartwarming there are parts of it, no matter how beautiful the rainbow, the flood is horrifying. The flood is heart-wrenching. The flood is ugly. The flood is gross. We're talking about people banging on the door trying to get in as the waters rise. We're talking about the surface of the earth breaking open, tearing, ripping, and ground pouring out of it and flooding the world. We're talking about the skies tearing open and water pouring out to flood the world. We're talking about water covering the highest mountain. There's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide. There's no umbrella big enough. There's no floaty ring strong enough to save you. We're talking about the death of everything outside the ark that walked on the face of the earth. Millions of dead, bloated, decaying bodies floating on the surface of the water. The bodies of your friends and your cousins and your aunts and your uncles floating by. Everyone you ever knew outside of your three sons, daughters-in-law, and your wife, if you're Noah. We're talking about death and stench and decay. That's ugly. There's not a lot of beauty there. There's not a lot of heartwarming, fuzzy feeling there. It's gnawing at the pit of your stomach, disgusted, gross, horrifying. The ark is the second greatest example of the hideousness of sin behind the cross. That's God saying, this is what it looks like when I've had enough. It's God saying that sin and death go hand in hand. The sin is gross and disgusting and decaying and filthy. Do not fool yourself. The flood was not pretty. Wasn't cool. It wasn't fun. It was awful. The flood is a warning. The flood is an epic warning. It is LED flashing lights, siren blaring, warning of the outcome of unforgiven sin. It is God shouting from heaven with thunder and lightning and pouring water, saying, when I've had enough, and I will wipe you out. I will not tolerate it anymore. And it is a reminder, a sign pointing forward to what is to come. Genesis 8, verse 21. Lord smelled the soothing aroma, and the Lord said to himself, I will never again curse the ground on account of man, for the intent of man's heart is evil from his youth. I will never again destroy every living thing as I have done. 9:15. I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all the flesh, and never again shall the water become a flood to destroy all flesh. But now then, we jump forward. We jump forward to the New Testament. We jump forward to the writings of Peter. We turn to 2 Peter chapter 3 and we start reading at verse 9. The Lord is not slow about His promise, as some count slowness. He's patient toward you. He doesn't wish for any to perish, but for all to come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come. And it's going to come like a thief. The heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat. The earth and its works will be burned up. Since all these things are to be destroyed in this way, what sort of people ought we to be? Holy conduct and godliness, looking for, hastening the coming of the day of God, on which account the heavens will be destroyed by burning, and the elements will melt with intense heat. God said, no, I'll make you a promise. I'll never again flood the earth and start over like this. He said, the next time it'll be for good. So even in its warning, the flood is terrifying. That when God says, I've had enough, He's going to have had enough. And He'll burn this world down. And everything in it. Matthew chapter 24, verses 37 and 38. Peter referred to Him coming like a thief. Jesus, in speaking of Himself, says the Son of Man will be just like, the coming of the Son of Man will be just like the days of Noah. In those days which were before the flood, they were eating and drinking. They were marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they didn't understand until the flood came and took them away. He said, when I come back, Luke 17, same idea, 26 and 27. So it's going to be just like the days of Noah. There are going to be people building arks. There are going to be people over here giving in marriage and being given in marriage. There's the ark, the church is going to be there. He said, but there are going to be a whole lot of people on the outside of it. When I come, I'm going to catch them unprepared. And I'm going to call my righteous home, and I'll destroy the rest. Again, from the writings of Peter, Second Peter chapter 2. God did not spare the angels when they sinned. He cast them into hell, committed them to pits of darkness reserved for judgment. He didn't spare the ancient world. He preserved Noah, a preacher of righteousness, with seven others when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly. If he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to all those who live ungodly lives thereafter, if he rescued Lot, oppressed by the sexual conduct of unprincipled men, for by what he saw and heard, that righteous man, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day with their lawless deeds. Now watch verse 9. Then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and to keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment. Chapter 3, verse 5. When they maintain this, that everything's been going on since creation without change, it escapes their notice that by the word of God, the heavens existed long ago. The earth was formed out of the water and by the water, but at that time it was destroyed, being flooded with water. Present heavens and earth by his word are being reserved for fire, kept for the day of judgment, for the destruction of ungodly men. The flood in Genesis 6, 7, 8, and 9 is an LED flashing light, blaring siren warning in vivid colors, in foul smells, in bloated death, reminder that when God is fed up with sin, he's coming back. And the next time, the last time, he's not going to wash it clean with water and start over. He's going to consume it. We'll either go to heaven or we'll go to hell. And there'll be no more second chances. If you can read the account of the flood without some measure of emotional response, with some internal tears, without the heartache for those who die lost, without some fear of what is to come, without feeling a little bit queasy about how disgusting it is, you've missed the point. Yeah, there's some beauty there, but you've missed the severity of sin. If the flood is just this little kiddie cartoon coloring page, or this little rhyme in your kid's rhyming Bible that doesn't mention the fact that millions of animals and people died because God said, I'm sick and tired of the way you're living. One last piece of beauty. God started with a clean earth. He washed it. It was foul. It was death. But when Noah walks out, it's all started over. It's a clean world. It's pure. Corresponds to a clean soul. 1 Peter 3 and verse 21 says the baptism corresponds to that. But this time it's the salvation of our souls. He washes us clean. He saves us through the waters of baptism. That's beautiful. Is there hope in the flood? Absolutely. But never lose sight of the terror. Never lose sight of the filth and the hideousness of it. Because if you do, not only do you miss the point, you run the risk of not learning the lesson. Jesus Christ died at Calvary. And the flood of blood that flowed from that cross has the power to cleanse all sin. But we have to come to Him. Noah had to do all that God commanded for that boat to float. God had to do everything that God commanded to come out safe on the other side. Some rules never change. The way we obey the rules may change. The rules themselves may change, but the process of obedience, that part of the rules never changes. Matthew 16, verses 15 and 16, he that believes and is baptized will be saved. 1 Peter 3:21, corresponding to that, baptism does now save us. Not the washing away of the filth of the flesh, but an appeal to God for a clean conscience. God said, I've put the rules in place. If you obey and you enter, you'll come out on the other side and you'll live. He said, if not, when I come back this time, it's for good. Are you ready for judgment day? Are you going to be able to survive the flood of fire that's coming? Will you stand before God in the blood of the Lamb, justified and whole and cleansed? Or will you look like sin? The death that floated by the ark as eight were preserved through the water. If you need to respond to the invitation to obey the gospel, to be saved, please do so this morning. Don't leave here and take the chance that the fire starts tonight while we stand and sing.